I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Andy Benoit is an NFL analyst for Sports Illustrated, the MMQB, and does a great job covering the NFL. He joins us now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. At the end of this segment, we will be giving away Nats tickets. A pair of tickets could be yours. You got to be listening when we ask for you. But, Andy, I want to start with the Redskins and a tweet that you sent just a little bit ago that I saw, and I completely agree with you. Montez Sweat has been very disappointing through two games. How much credit should we give him, though, based on the two tackles he opposed being excellent at different points during the last few seasons and just how young he is in his development?
Yeah, I think you certainly have to figure that in. Jason Peters, Tyron Smith, he might not face two better left tackles this season. What he needs to learn, and you see this with a lot of young players in the NFL at that position, and sometimes it takes a few years. Leonard Floyd for the Bears, for example, is a guy who took a few years on this. He needs to learn to develop an individual plan as a pass rusher. He doesn't have a, from what he's shown so far, he doesn't seem to have a wide array of moves or a full understanding of how to set up NFL left tackles. And again, that's not to be unexpected, but whatever dynamic traits that he has, they have not been evident because of that in his pass rushing so far.
Andy, I expected this Redskins offense, just kind of staying here in Washington, you lose Trent Williams for at least for however much time, and you take Alex Smith off. You lost $37 million in cap on your offense. I expected them to be worse than they were last year, and they were a bad group last year. They've been pleasantly okay, I would say. What have you seen from them through a couple games?
Yeah, I would agree with you. They're a little bit overmatched personnel-wise. That's to be expected. I think Bill Callahan's probably done a very nice job with that offensive line. They've looked okay on the left side. I didn't think they would look okay. And okay is just okay, but that's okay. They don't have a ton of talent to rely on, so they have to scheme it in their passing game. And I think Jay Gruden's still one of the best in the NFL at doing that. Case Keenum is going to see most of what you present to him from the pocket. He's not going to see everything from the pocket, though, and that's been a little bit of an issue. So it's a matter of consistency in the passing game, because I think they can scheme production there, but you still have to execute once you scheme it well.
You mentioned Jay Gruden as one of the better pass designers in the league. You know, I don't know how people would disagree with his acumen being pretty excellent. You mentioned Keenum, but Andy, watching their first half against the Eagles, guys were wide open, and Terry McLaurin's fast. But they're relying upon Paul Richardson and Kelvin Harmon and Trey Quinn, who was Mr. Irrelevant. They really don't have much talent. They haven't had Jordan Reed play a snap yet.
Right, which is why it gets back to how important it is to scheme the passing game open, because you're not going to line up and just have guys win on isolation routes on an island. That's not going to work. And it's real important that Keenum pulls the trigger on schedule, on time, and sees everything. You don't get on him for – I think there's things he hasn't seen the first couple of weeks. It's not enough to jump down his throat about. But in this case, given what you just said about their personnel, what we're kind of realizing about the whole offense, it's going to have jump down his throat results. They can't afford to miss on any opportunities.
Our buddy Andy Benoit with us here, NFL analyst for the MMQB. Great insight, as always, here on Grant and Danny. Some of the new coordinators or new play callers, a lot of new ones around the league, some much ballyhooed. We were so excited to get out of the dark ages of Mike McCarthy's offense with Green Bay. They're 2-0, but I don't know how much of that is because of their offense, Andy.
It hasn't looked great yet. I still need to put on that film against the Vikings. But against Chicago, obviously, it was very stagnant. It's been a little bit – it's been very choppy. One thing to remember, Aaron Rodgers, stylistically – he is not typically the kind of quarterback that fits Matt LaFleur's offense. They're very different styles. LaFleur's offense is built on timing and rhythm and a precision to the executing of dropbacks. So ball getting out on time, right on schedule. That's not how Rodgers has ever played. He was never asked to play that way under Mike McCarthy. So you have a future Hall of Famer, first ballot Hall of Famer, 35 years old, who's still immensely talented, who's played a certain way his whole life, and now he has to play a different way in order for the system to work. And we can have a debate about should he and what's the line there and who bends for who. And ultimately, it's going to be LaFleur having to bend for Rodgers and Rodgers having to bend for LaFleur. And that's a dance that might take some time. And I'm not at all surprised that we've seen ups and downs so far. What's pleasantly surprising is Green Bay's defense looks like it can carry more than its load in the meantime. So overall, the Packers, I'm sure if you told them beginning of the season this was where they'd be, they would probably, I'm sure they'd take it, because they probably knew in their heart of hearts, in fact, Rodgers alluded to it before the season, that it's going to take some time to get this figured out on offense. It's just a lot of radical change. And if you say, well, you got a defense that's going to win games for you in the meantime, and that's a big deal for Green Bay.
Andy Benoit on Grant and Danny. I've watched a lot of the Bears over the first 2 weeks, and I've been unimpressed entirely with Mitch Trubisky. Is the film as bad on him as the eyeballs seem to think? I mean, they called 18 plays from the 46 and in last week, and 15 were runs, which I think tells you everything that you need to know about what Matt Nagy thinks of Trubisky right now.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I'm about to put on there. I just got done with Chicago's defense on film. I'm about to put their offense on. I know what you just said, though, was something that's kind of come up last year with Trubisky and Matt Nagy. And, you know, coaches say all the right things. And that's their job. They absolutely should be doing that. But what the actions louder than words cliche applies a lot with play calling. And coaches tell you what they really think by who they play and what kind of plays they run with those guys. And Matt Nagy's offense has a lot of great bells and whistles. It's creative in the way it presents itself, but it's not an overly complex offense, and it doesn't always ask a ton from its quarterback. So that's where they are. Trubisky, let's remember, he's very young, and everyone has said this is the year he has to make a big step forward, and I kind of agree with that. So we'll see. So far, it's not off to a banging start. But kind of like the Packers deal, and the Bears are not as talented on offense as the Packers, but the Bears have a defense that can maybe camouflage some of these growing pains right now.
And you're both ends of the spectrum here. Who surprised you in a positive way, and who surprised you in a very negative way?
Well, that's a good question. The Bears' defense, I thought, would take a little bit of a step back this season because Chuck Pagano, who I think is a great coach and a good schemer and play caller, his system I didn't think matched up to their personnel quite as well as Vic Fangio's. So far, that I've looked wrong on that. I think Pagano has adjusted parts of his system to match what they did under Fangio, and the parts that he's doing that have been unique to him or true to him over the years, slot blitzes, for example, that they did with Buster Screen last week, the Bears are executing those very well. So it's been fun to see a good marriage between a really talented defense and a good proven defensive coordinator. I was a little skeptical on it, so that's a positive. As far as a negative and what's been surprising to me, oh, boy, I would have to, you know, it's so early in the season, you want to be hesitant before you start finding negatives because you learn that you tend to be more wrong about negatives than positives.
Andy, thanks for the time. We appreciate it as always.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, buddy.
Great having you on the show. Check out Andy Benoit's work, NSI, and, of course, MMQB and all over their site. We'll talk about some of the betting lines this weekend and the fact that we've got two games with 20-point spreads for the first time in 32 years on Sunday with Evan Abrams of the Action Network coming up at 1:45. Next, Case Keenum has played well, yet the Redskins are losing. If that continues, is there a chance he could keep his job? And somebody just did something in Major League Baseball that hadn't been done before. We'll tell you what next on Grant and Danny.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ronald Acuna Jr. of the Atlanta Braves hit a two-run home run this afternoon.
Of course he did.
Juan Soto's unbelievable and finished runner-up to Acuna last year in the Rookie of the Year chase. And you know how much we love Juan Soto on this show. It goes without saying, you're not going to find bigger supporters. Well, there's one guy who's young in Major League Baseball that might be better than Juan Soto, and that's Ronald Acuna Jr. within the division. His home run today gave him 40 for the season. He becomes the youngest player in the history of Major League Baseball to hit 40 homers and steal 30 bases in the same year. And he's probably robbed four or five home runs as well. He is as exciting a talent as we've had in this game in a long time, and only Mike Trout right now, definitively, now you could say without much thought or debate, is better than Acuna. He's just special.
He's incredible. And
he might be the biggest reason why the Braves are going to win that division. Apologies to Freddie Freeman, who's awesome.
I mean, and they get it up and down the lineup, and you're getting, you know, you get 30, near 40 home runs from Josh Donaldson, Dansby Swanson having a career year. Ozzie Albies is a mid-25 homers hitter, despite the fact he weighs 150. Soaking wet, looks like he's carrying a toothpick up there to the plate, but that guy can rake. That lineup is tough. Man, oh, man. They are really, really good top to bottom. But Acuna's special. Juan Soto's great. Nothing I'm saying right now about Acuna has anything to do with Juan Soto, who is sensational. Acuna's terrific. I would take him 10 times out of 10.
A caller number 10 is promised at 800-636-1067. You're winning two tickets to see the Nats. They are taking on the Indians in the final series of the season. This could be a game to get into the playoffs. Cleveland's going to need it, and Washington's going to need it. Going to be fun. 106.7 The Fan and PenFed Credit Union are taking you out to the ballgame and have been all year long, courtesy of PenFed Credit Union. Details, if you want them, thefandc.com/contest. So good luck to you at winning those two tickets on G&D right now. I saw Joe Theismann last night. I went over to Theismann's restaurant, as a matter of fact. Have you ever been over there?
I have not.
So from what he said yesterday, and I didn't know this, I think he used to have as many as maybe of a half dozen of them in the area. And the last one standing now is on Duke Street over in Old Town, basically. And right in Alexandria, it's a gorgeous restaurant. I have been there a couple of times. It's been many years. But I hadn't been there in a long time. They completely remodeled and refurbished it and opened it up, and everything's redone, and it is just beautiful.
Awesome.
So congratulations to Joe Theismann. They relaunched yesterday. They kind of did a reopening of sorts, big ceremony. He turned 70, by the way.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Which I can't fathom, and he's the best-looking 70-year-old who's ever lived. Like him and Helen Mirren. Is Helen Mirren 70?
That's my guess.
Helen Mirren's still hot.
We could birthday game this thing. It would make for great radio.
Let's see. Okay, I'm going to pull up
71
her.
Is what I got.
I'm going to say she's older than that. I'm going to say Helen Mirren's like 74. Helen Mirren is 74 on the dot.
Nailed it. Where's the bell?
Honestly, she's better looking at her age maybe even than Joe Theismann is at his age.
But that doesn't.
All apologies to Joe
Theismann. But that's not a disparagement of Joe Theismann.
It's not.
It's not.
It's just not.
It's a handsome dude.
But anyway, the point of the story is I was at Theismann's, wanted to go congratulate Joe and hang out. And
cool.
Took a picture with him and the Super Bowl trophy and ate some delicious finger foods passed around on trays. It was just a good night. But we were talking shop for a few minutes on the Redskins, and
sure.
He was talking about how impressed he's been and how well he thinks Case Keenum's playing. And we got into the discussion. If they keep losing, but Keenum is not the problem, and yes, he's missed a throw here or there, and he's cost them with, you know, a bad throw on a third down or what have you, but it's not like you're going to call in a rookie who's never played and you're going to get better production than missing one play here or there per game.
It's like the house is falling apart, but there's a speck of paint that isn't that is chipped away in the garage. He ain't the problem.
Remember what Theismann said on the show? He thought that Keenum was going to be good. He's been right about that. He thought he was a really good fit for Gruden and this offense, and so far he's been right about that. And he basically said on the air during training camp that if Keenum's good, just ride with him. Who cares if it's a full season? So what? So let Haskins sit. Now, the Redskins are not going to do that. I think we all know that. With or without Jay Gruden finishing the season, Dan Snyder, Bruce Allen, and company, they're not just going to let Dwayne Haskins hold a clipboard and wear an earpiece for 17 straight weeks and 16 games while people aren't coming to the game and their TV ratings are bad, which they were already over the last couple of weeks compared to what was expected. So I ask you this, Danny, and I think we can take some calls on this as well. I've got some thoughts, but I'll save them for a minute. Here's the question. If Keenum keeps playing like he's playing, how would you describe that? Good, really good?
Solid. Okay. Strong even, yeah.
But they're not winning. How much longer can he keep this job? And I don't mean they don't win another game. Like they don't have to be 0-5 per se,
no, sure,
or 0-6. But if they're not winning and Keenum's playing well, can Keenum keep the starting job or not?
The answer to me ultimately is no, because I get the sense that they have figured out what I think is intuitive. Once you've drafted Dwayne Haskins, this year is really and truly about how good can he be. What is the process for us to get him to be great? No matter who has to be sacrificed on the altar, no matter who you have to go through, move on from, trade away, bench, promote, whatever, it's about Dwayne Haskins being great. So whenever the time, for me, that he is ready, quote-unquote, I don't know when that is, and give him credit for being patient here. Whatever the time that he is ready, it's his time. Keenum, for goodness sakes. Why do I name more quarterbacks?
You're
John Freeze, Heath Shuler.
My dad does.
Goodness gracious.
Where he gets frustrated when he tries to call one of us. There's four of us in the family growing
Grant,
up. Yeah,
Ryan.
And then he just gets into the routine and he just starts naming people that don't actually exist.
My dad did that too. Yeah. There's only two of us at home. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yes. I don't care how well he plays. I don't care if he's the MVP frontrunner. This is a one-year guy that was traded, acquired for a ham sandwich and an 11th rounder in a draft that doesn't exist anymore. This is Dwayne Haskins' thing. Whenever he's ready, and that's the end of it for me.
So
I think they realized that too.
Yesterday, Pat Shurmur, when he spoke with the media for the first time after they benched Manning to go to Jones, said everyone was kind of up in arms. Again, the entire New York reaction of all of this has been unbelievable, start to finish.
They're like, we will play on Sunday. They're like, what? No!
What do you want? I don't understand what anybody wants.
The sun will come up tomorrow. Oh, my God!
You hate Eli, but you hate Daniel Jones, and you hate that Daniel Jones isn't playing, but now you're mad it was only two games for Eli. Like, everyone's just running around chasing their tails, and it's just a bunch of people crashing into each other.
We are so angry up here.
But Shurmur said, look, when we drafted Daniel Jones, this day was inevitable this season. We were not going to have him sit an entire year. His point was, you don't draft a guy at number six to not play him. Now, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, the question was, how long can Eli and the team allow us to wait? I think the Redskins feel and know that their situation is the exact same. They just aren't going to say it until the day they have that press conference when they name Dwayne Haskins the starter, because it's not fair to Case Keenum. They're not going to come out and say that now, but you're right. This is about Dwayne Haskins at some point. And the question is, how long can you wait? How long can you go before it becomes Haskins' time? I wonder, and we can get into this part next, I wonder if any of this is going to be related to Jay Gruden's job security. In other words, if Gruden's still the head coach and you're hovering somewhere around 500 in 5 or 6 weeks, I think he's much more inclined to just roll with Case Keenum.
Yeah, then you say, hey, let's go for it. We're still alive here.
Stay in the mix.
Yeah.
If you're 0-5 and Jay Gruden got fired, let's say, then whether it's Bill Callahan or Kevin O'Connell or whoever gets promoted to the head coaching role, I think you make the quarterback change at that point.
It would stand to reason,
wouldn't
it?
Because this is a lost season.
Yeah.
The year is over. We're in evaluation mode. And the more games for Dwayne Haskins, the better the evaluation.
Because what should be happening is your metric is no longer how many games do you win. It's how good is that kid? How much promise does he show?
So that's the question. If Keenum keeps playing well, but the results for the Redskins as a team are losses more than wins, how long can he stave off Haskins? Or should they just keep Keenum in there as long as he keeps performing as well as he has? Grant and Danny on the Fan.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
I wouldn't want to be Case Keenum on Monday night. Yes, Donald Penn has protected your blind side well, but he has not dealt with the Bears' defensive front.
Release the hounds.
The Chicago Bears, defensively, as Andy Benoit eloquently pointed out when he joined us, if you missed that interview, you can podcast it at thefandc.com. They dominate in the trenches.
They are bad men.
Khalil Mack might be the best pass rusher the Redskins face this season. Might be the best in all of football. Their defensive line, as far as down D linemen with Eddie Goldman and this guy, Roy Harris Robertson.
The hyphen? That guy is nasty.
He moves all over. He plays a little tackle, plays a little end.
Where did he come from and who's he mad at? That's what I want to know. That guy is a badass.
Here's the guy that's going to destroy the Redskins on Monday night that I worry about. Like, if I was Jay Gruden out on the practice field right now, I'd say, we got to get ready for Akeem Hicks, man. Akeem Hicks, who wears number 96. Just burn it into your brain because you're going to see it all night on Monday night. That guy's got a sack and four solo tackles in a fairly quiet two games so far, which just tells me, do theory style, he is ready for 2.5 quarterback sacks and 4 quarterback hits.
I think Roquan Smith will tackle the running back within 2 yards of the line of scrimmage a dozen times. I think that's a thing. I think it's a lot of 2nd and 11, a lot of 3rd and 9. I think the hounds will be unleashed. This defense is the truth. So to me, there's no shame in not scoring and moving the ball against Chicago because nobody will this year.
They're really good. But how about this? If they move the ball, if they score some points, if they throw the ball well again.
Then what do I do?
What if they protect Case Keenum on Monday night?
What do I do with my hands?
He's got 1 sack against through 2 games. If he gets through this game with, let's say, 1 sack, and they've allowed 2 sacks despite playing the Bears, the Cowboys, and the Eagles through 3 games, and Keenum, let's say, who's at 100-plus quarterback rating twice, looks pretty sharp again. McLaurin has another big day, goes for 85. Win or lose, they throw the ball well.
Uh-huh.
To me, that's as tough a test as they're going to be given. There's not a Scantron harder to bubble in than this one. Prime time against the Bears with an extra day to prepare for you with that defensive front healthy. Then all of a sudden, I think you go into future weeks thinking they can protect. I think it does hurt Trent Williams' demands just a little bit because 36-year-old Donald Penn
holding his own a little bit.
Has done just fine. I think it does come crumbling down, for the record, this week. But if it doesn't, then I think it'll be time to say this offensive line, let's figure out how to run block. But
yeah,
from a pass pro standpoint.
Yeah, we don't seem to have that in the bag of tricks. But for throwing the ball, they've held up okay. I mean, even in obvious passing situations, right? And I think that's the big hurdle for Haskins.
The Clint hurdle.
The Clint hurdle, if you will, is, you know, making sure those protections. So right now, you know, teams are dialing all sorts of stuff up, trying to confuse the quarterback, et cetera. Keenum has a mastery of it. It's going, okay, we'll slide here, you'll slide here, you pick up this guy, you pick up that guy. It's the underrated part of quarterbacking in the NFL, where the other guy is playing a live chess match with missiles against you, basically. And they'll find a way to confuse a young quarterback. Unless you're just so calm, cool, and collected and know everything that's coming against you, it's going to be a big challenge. So I think that's the biggest hurdle for Haskins, is not to get hit so many times that he, you know, stunts his growth.
The question we asked you guys is, if Keenum keeps playing the way he is and the Redskins keep losing, how long can he hold off Haskins? I think, honestly, probably like 5 losses. If that's 1-5, 0-5, 2-5, doesn't really matter. Somewhere right around there. I've said since day one, I think Haskins ends up starting against the Dolphins right after the Patriots game. As well as Keenum has played, I don't think that's changed. I think when they get to a place where they can put the plane down, when Rockhound can land the jet and it isn't on an iron plate with Colonel Willie Sharp, I think that's when they're going to put the tires down and try to get Dwayne Haskins on the field.
So ETA this thing for me. So let's say they lose to the Bears, which is conceivable. I think they'll win, but they could lose this game, right? They lose to the Bears. Maybe they pick up a W against the Giants, 1-3, Patriots game, scheduled loss, Haskins against the Dolphins. Let's say they beat the Bears and beat the Giants, 2-2, then 2-3 against the Patriots. Does that change the timeline at all?
Yes.
It because pushes it back how much?
Well, give me the next few games. I mean, to me, Dolphins, it's all record dependent.
49ers.
So they beat the Dolphins. They're 3-3.
Then the Thursday night piece against the Minnesota organization.
They lose to the 49ers. They're 3-4. You're not going to go to Haskins in a short week. So let's say you fall to 3-5. Then you got a week and a half to get them ready. It's almost like a bye week. So you do it right after the Vikings.
If they beat Chicago.
If they win the next 2 weeks, then Keenum buys himself probably the next
a month
yeah. or so.
Wow. A lot of line there.
I mean, that's two wins they got to get in two games in the span of 6 days.
Oh, of course.
Let's go to Zach in Stafford on G&D. What's up?
Not much. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, Zach.
Well, my thing is, I don't think Haskins should play at all this year. Say what you will about, like, it's his turn. You got him in the first round. He should play. No rookie quarterback has come in and has wowed anybody in a long time. It's always been like a second-year quarterback, like Patrick Mahomes. He comes in, and he is one of the greatest quarterbacks. So it's good for a young quarterback to come in and sit for the first year and kind of learn the NFL instead of throwing him into a crappy situation with the Redskins and having him fail again.
But it is also good, if you're not going to damage development, to get that guy some reps on the field to let him go through some growing pains, which are inevitable when the team's bad and it doesn't matter that much. And you could say they just don't have a lot of weapons around him to help him. How different is their situation than the Giants?
Yeah,
I know they have Saquon Barkley. Like, who's Daniel Jones throwing to? Evan Ingram and who? Sterling Shepard?
Right, not yet.
They've decided that he's got plenty of help and they're going to throw him out there.
If this, and the caller brought up a point where everyone looks at the Mahomes sort of rule at this stage. If there was a hard and fast rule as to what the best practice was, everyone would do it. Nobody knows. Sometimes you want Deshaun Watson. Go through the struggle. Get your butt kicked year one. Year two, you guys are 11-5. You throw for 4,400 yards, and you're a terrific player. Sometimes it's that. Sometimes it's, you know, I don't know, Joey Harrington or Kelly Smith or somebody.
Honestly,
we don't know.
You're right. There's not one way to do it. It's not that we haven't found the way to do it, because there isn't one way. It's like saying, people will email me occasionally, and when I'm emailing them back, they'll be like, how do I get into radio? Well, here's how Danny did it. Here's how I did it.
What you want to do is
here's how Chad did it. Here's how the junkies did it. Everyone's story is going to be very different. How do you lose weight? Well, for me, I cut out these three things that I was addicted to, and for you, it might be working out. Like, it's your own deal. Every team's path with a quarterback is different. There's no right or wrong way. Joe in Waldorf, what's up?
Hey, Joe.
What's going on, fellas? Hey, so if I had my way, I'd have the kid playing now. And it's not a knock at all on Case Keenum. He's actually played way better than I ever imagined he
Same
would.
Here. Yeah.
But that's kind of to my point. The guy's playing the best football that he's capable of playing, and it's still not winning us games. So at some point, to me, you have to throw all expectations out the window. That's what I hear a lot is, you can't go to Haskins, well, because they're going to lose, we're going to lose anyway. Throw the expectations out the window. Get rid of this thought that Case can get us to the playoffs, because he can't. At best, we're going to go 6-10 with him. Let the kid get all these extra snaps. It's, you cannot replace him playing on the field, the experience. I'd much rather go into next season knowing that that he has 13 games under his belt than to go into next season saying, well, he got to play four games, but none of the games meant anything, so we're still not sure if he's any good. And we went 7-9 last year again.
Yeah, it's a great phone call. I agree with a lot of what you said. I would rather, and this is all kind of hypothetical, we don't know the situation behind the scenes. I would rather 9 games where he's prepared and knows everything he needs to know for those 9 than 13 where he wasn't quite prepared for the first few, though.
Mm.
I would rather 9. You know, they give quarterback tests, right? O'Connell's going to be giving him these tests. He's got to answer all the questions. What do you do in this look and against this team? And when he's getting passing grades on those, I'd rather 9 of those games than just putting him out there now before he's ready for prime time. We can get a couple more thoughts on this as we continue. Also, Evan Abrams of the Action Network next as we look at some of the Week 3 matchups that are intriguing on Grant and Danny.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Titans, Jags, 8:20 kickoff tonight on Thursday Night Football. Grant and Danny welcoming you back, 106.7 The Fan. No Nats game this evening means you get to watch the start of week three in the NFL on national television. Right now, let's go to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Welcome onto the show, Evan Abrams of the Action Network. Always like talking about some of the betting lines and getting insight from him going into the weekend. This report from Evan Abrams was sponsored by the Action Network. So, Evan, why don't we start with two games with 20-plus point spreads this weekend? What does that tell us?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, it's great to be on. And what it's telling us is the market is out of its mind. Basically, according to our data, it's the first time since about 1990 or the strike shortened year in 87, they're going to have two teams favored by 17 points or more in the same week. I mean, really, we've hit a point in the NFL where there's teams who are literally giving up. And then you have these powerhouses, I guess, in Dallas, who's looked really good. And then, of course, New England. But it's some crazy stuff, man. This week is going to be something we've really never seen.
So the stories, obviously, Evan, are these 20-plus point lines. But there's a bunch of big lines elsewhere. I mean, usually a touchdown and a half is the largest you might see. There's multiple ones of those. There's a 9-point line, Minnesota favored home against Oakland. Are we now in an era, in a league that prided itself and got this big and successful based on parity, and every week is kind of a referendum, not having some of that parity anymore?
I think it's about parity, but guys, I also think it's about the market. Like last night, you had the Astros minus 500. In football, you're seeing 21-point spreads. I think with legalization, you're also seeing a spike in bets, a spike in people interested in betting, and that's pushing these point spreads and money lines just to crazy, crazy amounts. But one stat I'll give you guys is most NFL games with a 6-point spread or higher in the first 3 weeks of the regular season, we've got 22 in 2019. That's tied for the most since 2003 in our Bet Labs database. So right now you're seeing spread spike, and it's just something we haven't seen in the market.
That's crazy. I also saw something that was interesting I want to get your reaction to. And our guest who's with us at this time every single week is Evan Abrams of the Action Network. I saw that of the 32 games through 2 weeks so far, we've gone under the total 20 times. And it's the first time in years that that's happened. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things you are seeing, and scoring is just as high, you're seeing a lot of offensive holding penalties. And penalties are through the roof. We wrote an article on ActionNetwork.com from PJ Walsh. He took a bunch of great stats from Kevin Seifert from ESPN. And that's really what you're seeing is calls being taken back. And some of those unders are really hitting at a clip that we haven't seen last year about this time. Over-unders are about 500. This year, like you said, over, I believe, 60%. So what you're seeing is, you know, a lot of big runs and big plays being taken back. And I think those calls are being paid attention to a little bit more across the league.
All right, let's get to the game here in town our audience cares a lot about, and that's the Redskins and the Bears. We've got to wait an extra day till Monday Night Football. Washington's 0-2. Chicago got that win in Denver that seemed like a gift to get to 1-1. The Bears' offense just doesn't seem good enough to run away and bury the Redskins. Should we expect a close game on Monday night?
I will. I mean, the stats from Trubisky's point of view, guys, is just unbelievably – it's atrocious. I mean, 33rd of 34 quarterbacks in terms of rating, 28th of 32 in QBR. This season, it's Falk, Bridgewater, Cam, Big Ben, and Trubisky are the only quarterbacks to not throw a touchdown pass. It's just he's not being able to run this offense. And then think about this. In Trubisky's last five games, Chicago's just averaging 14.4 points per game, two touchdown passes, 6.2 yards per attempt. So it's not just these two games. Trubisky hasn't been able to run this offense into last season. So to me, I think anything – right now the line is 4. It opened at 4.5. I think the extra hook is important, especially 4 is a fun little key number. Many people look at 3, but 4 is also very key in the NFL. So I think there is, especially if Jordan Reed, which I know he's on the mark right now, I believe he practiced. I think there's value in Washington with that hook.
Evan, awesome as always, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy.
Evan Abrams of the Action Network, each and every Thursday ahead of Thursday Night Football, with some of the lines that stand out to him, joining us here on Grant and Danny. If you missed any part of today's show, including Andy Benoit earlier this hour, thefandc.com, grantanddanny.com/audio. Also, Jimmy Moreland yesterday, Kevin Bacon yesterday. Those podcasts have done very well. I know people were excited to hear that we had Kevin Bacon on. He was pretty cool.
My wife couldn't believe it, by the way.
Isn't that cool?
Couldn't believe it. She was like, He's like, is this a misprint? Did you guys do it? Was this a bit? I said, it was a bit, but it was real. He was on the show.
This is a thing that actually happened.
I told her we Chris Farley did pretty bad.
Yeah, we did okay, I thought, overall.
You remember a Stir of Echoes in 99?
The FanDC.com. I've got the Jags tonight over the Titans, by the way. Taking the underdog.
I think the Titans win.
They should.
Here's why. I always count them out. I don't like them. And there they are at the end of the season, always towards the top of that dumb division. I think they win, and I think it's a gross game of sadness.
Thanks to Evan Abrams for that report, sponsored by the Action Network. All right, we're back at it tomorrow. Hub Arkish from Chicago on the Bears and the Redskins, plus a full preview of Week 3.
We are the Watcher on the Walls, and our watch has ended.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.